Good morning, everybody. I have a very, very old memory that I want to share with you. This is one of my very, very first earliest memories. I couldn't have been more than three. And it happened on this sidewalk in front of this bar. I remember that it was raining and it was dark, and I really don't like being damp, and I was standing outside the car in the rain and getting damp, and I hated how that felt. I still do. I was standing next to our car, which was at the curb, and my mom was telling me to go into the bar and get my stepdad so that we could drive him home. And none of that seemed weird to me at the time. I just didn't like being wet. And I remember that to the left of the door, there was an old Milwaukee beer sign, a neon sign. And I couldn't read it at the time, but it said Milwaukee's Best. And I remember seeing how the drops of rain on the window distorted the light from that. And I just remember that so vividly and so clearly. And that's the whole memory. I'm pretty sure I actually went in and got my stepdad and everything kind of went on as usual, but it's one of my very, very first memories, very, very oldest. And what I'd like to tell you is that this isn't a sad story. This is a happy story because it is the only memory I have of my stepdad drinking. That it was just shortly after this, it must have been, that he started going to AA. He had been drinking for 20 years. And shortly after this event, he stopped. And he was sober the rest of his life. The reason I bring that up is that he is one of my true stories that I have about someone who changed. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but changing is hard. I know that for me, I like the way that I am, and I don't want to be any other way. It's hard to do. We've been in this sermon series that we're calling Practicing the Way, where we've learned about how complex people are and how it makes change difficult. And it takes understanding to get us through that journey. My stepdad, when he went to this bar, he felt like he was free. So every bad behavior feels that way. That's why we do it. Everything that sin advertises itself as freedom. And he felt like whenever he went to a bar and he drank, he was kind of sticking it to his parents, who were always telling him to be good. You know, don't drink, don't smoke, and all of these rules that they had that felt so restricted to him. And when he went to the friendly tap, it's a word that has so much weight in my head. Whenever he went to the friendly tap, he felt free. But really, he was just a sad man in the cage. Because that's how sin works. It advertises itself as freedom, and then it imprisons you. And it can hold you forever if you let it. What he had to learn, my stepdad's name was Dick, so I'm going to call him that now. I called him Dad for the first few years of my life. There came a point where that felt weird to me, so I started calling him Dick. Dick was a complicated man. He had layers. We've been talking in our sermon series about practicing the way that a person is complicated like an iceberg. That, you know, at the very top, you have the things that your body does, the things that people outside of you can see. With him, it was going to a bar every day and then coming home drunk, and sometimes his little toddler had to come into the bar to get him. But there was so much more to it than that, that he had to learn and that he had to navigate through. He learned that the stuff that his body did, his outward behavior, really came from the way that he thought. He always called it stinking thinking. It's an AA phrase. That he behaved the way that he did because he was thinking and feeling things that hurt and he needed to feel better. And he also learned that he's more than just a body with a mind. He learned that he was a spiritual person, that deep down in his spirit, he was desiring booze because he was in deep, deep pain and because he felt alone in the universe. And all of that had to get worked on together for him to heal. We've talked about this the last few weeks. Today is going to wrap up this piece, and we're going to look at all of these three together within the story of Dick, the story of my stepdad, and how all of these were part of his journey, and how it's part of our journey, too. Have you ever felt stuck? If you're self-aware at all, of course you have. Every single one of us here has a sin problem. And it may be a thing that's big, like an addiction. Maybe it's easy to label like that. Maybe it's not. Maybe you're a gossip. Maybe you like hurting people with your mouth. Maybe there's a talk that you need to have with a friend or with a coworker, but maybe you're a little bit of a coward. Yeah, that's me. I don't like having hard conversations. What's your thing? You know, you don't have to yell it out loud, but I want you to have it in your mind, because we're going to walk through what it's going to take to heal that these behaviors that you've got that you'd kind of wish weren't there, but they are, and they won't go away. You may have even tried to stop doing X or Y or Z, but you find, like Dick did, that it's complicated, that there's more to you than just stopping a behavior. You got to go deeper. I'm going to call this sermon today Rehabilitating Your Behavior. We've talked about reforming your heart, your spirit. We've talked about renewing your mind. And today we're going to pull it together where all of that blossoms up into your behavior. So how is it? How do you break free from broken behavior patterns? That's the question that we're going to answer today. And the first thing is, well, just stop it. There's a wonderful old Bob Newhart bit, comedian from when I was younger. He was very dry humor. And he was a therapist in this sketch, and someone came and they just described their problem. Like, you know what, I just can't seem to stop shopping. That I'm always going out and spending money on these things, and I just don't know what to do. And his advice, the therapist, was just, well, stop it. It's like, well, I just really want to talk about my childhood. No, stop it. And the joke was that he was being a bad therapist, but I think he was actually doing a pretty good job. When you join AA, you're doing it because you're drinking poison daily. That's what my dad was doing. He was drinking poison. He knew he was drinking poison. He was doing it every day, and it was killing him. It was no time to be thinking about the complicated nature of the wholeness of being. That would come later. But the first thing that he had to do was stop poisoning himself. So there was that day he finally went to an AA meeting and said, hey, I'm Dick, and I'm an alcoholic. And everyone in the room clapped and cheered for his act of vulnerability. And it gave him such power. He rode that every day for the rest of his life. But the thing that you have to do before any of the work can be done is to just stop. Find a way to make your behavior, whatever it is that you're trying to get rid of, find a way to make it accessible, inaccessible to you for a little while, you know, a week. You know, go for that. It's not a permanent solution. Because you're so much more than just your behavior. You got to work on that other stuff. But what I've noticed in my own time, that when I take a break from a behavior, I can, you know, make myself not do something for a day, for a week, a month. It opens up so much space and time. It's only when you do this that you realize how much time you waste doing this thing that you don't like. It opens up time and space for the hard work that remains to be done. And that's really the zero step. They don't include that in the 12 steps, but I call it the zero step. The first thing to do is stop poisoning yourself, stop dying, so that you can spend a little time working on your soul. And the first thing that you need to do is connect. Sin is, in my experience, primarily an isolation problem. That I'm disconnected from the people who love me and actually care about me, the people who might help me make a good decision today. So what Dick had to do, he had to start going to meetings. And in AA, they have a thing where they say the best thing that you can do if you're just starting out in recovery is in the next 90 days, go to 90 meetings. That's a lot. So think 3 months and going to an AA meeting every day and going in front of a whole group of people and saying, hi, I'm Dick, and I'm an alcoholic, and this has just become so unmanageable for me that I need you guys every single day. You ever wonder why I'm always at church when you're here? I'm here practically every single time. I'm here because I need it. I need it because I like sin as much as anybody in this room, and I need you guys to help me keep my head on straight and to make me remember what's good and for you to remind me to do good things rather than bad things. I'm here because I need it. I need you. You connect with a few different things, and I would say most of the 12 steps are about connecting. They're about connecting with people, just like coming to church, just like our open table group. I try to never miss that because I need people around me. Church is great, but I really, really like sitting around and doing nothing and just talking about nothing. That feels good. Just being in the room with Aaron and Audrey, they're in my open table group. Just being in the room with them makes me better. They make me realize how good life is. And Eden helps too, because she is just so darn cute. That really does help. You need to connect with people who will help you do the right thing. People who know you. That's hard. Chances are this thing going on inside of you that you'd like to step away from, it's not a thing that you like to talk about. And it's easier for some people than for others. But I would encourage you, find somebody you trust that you can talk to and make sure they know what's going on with you. Have there be at least one person in your life who knows all of you. Ideally, that a spouse is a good choice for that. Try to get a couple other ones too. Connect with them and make sure they know what's going on with you so that you can check in with them periodically. I have never recovered from sin alone. And I've had a lot to recover from. When you're raised by a person who's trying to not be an alcoholic, there's patterns that they have that they're getting away from that they pass on to you. I had a lot of things to unlearn, and I needed people. I needed a lot of people who knew me. Dick always said, we're only as sick as our secrets. AA is full of these little sayings that they're so helpful, and that's always stuck with me, that if I've got a secret, I need there to be one or two or three people who know my secret, all of it. That's not an easy thing, but I want to commend it to you. And the thing is, the more you connect with people, the more you connect with reality. I'm very good at lying to myself. I'm not happy to admit that, but I am. I've even convinced myself of some of my own delusions. That's scary when that happens. But when you connect with people, they see things about you that you've learned to ignore, that you've learned to not see. And they'll tell you if they're your friends. If they're not your friends, they might just help you drink because they want to avoid stuff like that too. But when you connect with people, you connect with reality. You start to realize, you know what? I'm not a party animal out here being free. Maybe, just maybe, I'm this person in a cage. That's why you need to connect with people. Because if they're honest with you and if they're insightful, they will tell you the truth that this thing that you think is freedom is not. That this thing that you think is freedom is a cage keeping you away from your real life. And it's not something you want. There's something Jesus says about this. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. That feels so backwards, doesn't it? I mean, sin, as I said, advertises itself as freedom, but it just isn't. And when you connect with reality, when you see that you're stuck, you can also find connection with God, and when you do, you get very good news about your stuckness, about the cage that you find yourself in. You get the good news that Christ has set us free. And in Galatians 5, Paul says, Christ has set us free, so stand firm and do not let yourselves be tied down by the chains of slavery again. The way I understand salvation and what happened on the cross is that I live in these cages and that God himself has come and ripped the door off my cage. I'm in a prison cell with no door. I'm in a prison with no gates. And what I find is that sometimes I just like being in the cage. So even though I have the wide world open to me, sometimes I just prefer to sit in the cage for a little while longer. And that's a bad place to be. You can sit inside that cage forever if you want. This is deadly serious. If you want to be in denial about yourself, if you want to continue holding on to things that poison you, you can get stuck there, and you can get stuck there forever. And that is the saddest thing in the world that I can imagine. Being in a, sitting in a demolished cage that I don't need to sit in. I really encourage you, take this seriously. You're not meant to be caged. You're meant to be free and wild and open and awesome. The next thing you want to do as you're as you've been connecting with people, with reality, and with God, something that I hope you discover the more you get to know God is that you need God desperately. Remember the Garden of Eden story where God makes these people and he's like, okay, you guys are going to be co-rulers with me. That, you know, I'm God, I run the world, yep, but you guys are going to be my helpers. You guys are going to be the co-pilot with me in piloting this ship. It's a very special role that God gave to us, not because we're particularly awesome, it's just because God is particularly awesome. And God likes to share. Everything that he does, he likes to do together. But the problem in Eden is that Adam and Eve, and really all of us, we decide we like that, but we don't like the God part. We don't like the co-pilot part. Our thought, the fundamental human sin is that we think we can do it by ourselves. We like to think that we can be our own God, and that's really all the world needs. They just need to do what I say because I'm right. I have it all figured out. Let's go do it. It's where all the misery of life comes from. But the greatest thing that ever happened to Dick and the greatest thing that ever happened to me was coming to the end of myself and realizing how extremely finite I am, and realizing that, you know what, I've spent a long time trying to run my own life, and I have run it into the ground. What really brought that home for Dick, and really brought home for me, there's one of the 12 steps where you try to make an exhaustive list of everything about you that is off, everything about you that hurts the people around you, and that hurts yourself. This is not an easy thing to do. It's one of the hardest pieces of the 12 steps. It has to do with getting in touch with reality. For Dick, he had to realize, I had a toddler have to go into a bar and drag his slobbering dad out of the bar. Luckily, I don't remember that part. I think that part might have felt traumatic. The memory that I've got is not traumatic other than being wet. He had to realize that that happened. He had to realize that he had lost a whole marriage before he met my mom. That he had two sons of his own who were following him down the same path that he was on. And that they were addicted to alcohol as well. He had to go through that list, and that is not easy to do, but it's an essential piece. If you're not in touch with reality, you can't move forward from it. If you're in denial about anything that you've done, I invite you not to. If you want, come and talk to me about it. I've come to the point in my life where I have lost the ability to judge anyone, ever, for anybody. And if you don't believe me, just try. Try to get me to judge you. I can't. You and I are at the foot of the cross together, no matter what you've done. If you're a serial killer, come see me. I will turn you in if you are, because you really need to stop. But please, come talk to me anyway about your serial murders, and we'll find you help together. So when Dick came to the end of himself, when he realized how deep a hole that he had dug for himself with his alcoholism, how much he had hurt the people around him, how much he was killing himself, how much he had doomed his sons to alcoholism. When he came to that, he realized that it was because of him feeling like that he was right, feeling like he had the answers. Proverbs is a wonderful book for anybody who is like that, and that's all of us. The way of fools, it always seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice. I think we could probably say we all wish we could have learned that earlier than we did. Another proverb, trust God from the bottom of your heart. Don't try to figure out everything on your own. It's something we all try to do. Listen for God's voice in everything you do, everywhere you go, and He is the one who will keep you on track. You and I were made to pilot the ship of ourselves, of the whole world even, but we were not meant to do it alone. And when we try, we mess it up awfully. One encounter I had with Dick was, I think I was probably 14, and I read a poem, and to my half-developed brain, it seemed really deep and really smart. And I had put a poster on my wall of this poem, and to my 14-year-old brain, it was like awesome. And the poem ended that I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. That felt so cool. That felt so true when I was 14. When I was just starting to think abstract thoughts, but really hadn't experienced much of the world yet, I felt so in charge. I felt so capable. I knew that every problem that the world had, I could fix it. Of course, it didn't even occur to me that I had some problems that needed fixing. That would come later. But that poem was so neat. I'm the captain of my soul. And I had that poster on my wall. I'm being awesome, you know. And eventually Dick came to me, and he pointed to that poster. And he said, you know what? I am the worst captain my soul ever had. And then he gave me one of his sayings. There is a God, and I'm not him. That was the thing that he had to learn. For him to grow up, he had to ask God to take his place in the pilot seat. And Dick moved himself from the pilot seat to the co-pilot seat. And that made life open up for him. When he stopped pretending to be God, and when he started to realize, I don't always give myself very good advice. One of the most unintuitive parts of the recovery journey is to take this most basic of human instincts, that we want to be God, that we want to worship ourselves, that we want to think, I belong to me, and I'm going to make my choices, and they're going to be awesome, to get to that place and say, no, that is not working for me. That's why you need to be in touch with reality, because that's your proof. That's why the real world is important. It's what you bump into when you're wrong. And he asked God to take charge of his life. I had a similar journey myself, and it took a lot of pain and time to get to that point. I feel like I wasted a lot of time in my life trying to not ask God to take charge. There's a wonderful verse in Romans 12, that says, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's kindness, because God is so gracious to us and loves us so much, has ripped the door off our cage, in view of God's kindness, offer your bodies as living sacrifices, Is that an image or what? Most sacrifices have the privilege of being dead when they're sacrificed. Offer your bodies daily as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. When we come together every week and we sing, what we're doing is we're confessing for ourselves, you know what, there's a God, and I'm not him. That's what worship is. And I need to do it every week. I need to do it every day to remind myself that I am not in charge, that I am not the captain of my soul, and that when I try, I hurt everyone around me. I have a spiritual practice I'd like to share with you, and we're going to do it together. This is called the Living Sacrifice Prayer. I took pieces of it from others, some of it I made myself. But this is something I try to pray every day in the morning before I start. I try to take the different parts of my body and offer them to God. So can we close our eyes? And we're just going to go through this prayer. And I'd like you to take whatever parts of you are involved in some behavior that you wish you didn't have. Just think about that part and how you want God to be in charge of it. Here's the Living Sacrifice Prayer. Lord, here is my body. It belongs to you, not to me. Teach it to do what is good today. Lord, here's my body. Lord, here are my eyes. They belong to you, not to me. Teach them to see what you want me to see today. Lord, here are my eyes. Lord, here are my ears. They belong to you, not to me. Teach them to hear what you want me to hear today. Lord, here are my ears. Lord, here is my tongue. It belongs to you, not to me. Teach it to say what you want it to say today. Lord, here is my tongue. Lord, here is my heart. It belongs to you, not to me. Teach it to desire what is good today. Lord, here is my heart. Lord, here is my mind. It belongs to you, not to me. Teach it to think how you think today. Here is my mind. Lord, here are my emotions. They belong to you, not to me. Teach them to feel what you feel today. Lord, here are my emotions. Lord, here is my sexuality. It belongs to you, not to me. Teach it to be the blessing you want it to be today. Lord, here is my sexuality. Lord, here are my hands. They belong to you, not to me. Teach them to serve whomever you want me to serve today. Here are my hands. Lord, here are my feet. They belong to you, not to me. Teach them to take me wherever you want me to go today. Here are my feet. Lord, here is my body. It belongs to you, not to me. Teach it to do what is good today. Here is my body. Can you imagine how transformed your life might be if you took a minute to say that every day? It's made a difference for me. Generally, I wake up in the morning thinking my body is mine and thinking that running the world is my job. That's why I get stressed out, because I believe silly things like that. When I say this prayer, I learn to not be that way. It puts me in touch with reality, and it puts myself next to God and not in front of God. And that transforms my whole day when that's the way that I think. Offer your bodies as living sacrifices. Hold that in your head. Think that one through. And what I've found is that when you give your life to God, when you ask God to tell you what to do, the first thing he tells you to do is go reconcile with the people that you're in conflict with. That if someone has something against you, this is a saying of Jesus, that if you remember that a friend has something against you, anything, immediately go to this friend and be reconciled. Remember how I said sin is an isolation problem? Reconciliation is what fixes it. It's right at the center of the gospel, that our relationships with others are broken because love God, love others hasn't been as much in the center of our life as it ought to be. When that happens, go reconcile. With Dick, this was another very, very hard step, where first he made quite a large list. This was a lengthy document of all of the things that he had done that he regretted. And he discovered that that list just kept getting longer. There was so much more to say than he ever realized needed to be said. And the next step is recognizing those broken relationships that were just strewn behind him. And he went to each person as he was able and said, you know what, I did this to you. That was rotten. I'm sorry. And is there something that I can do to make it up to you? That's the work of reconciliation. It's right at the center of the gospel. It's one of the reasons why we come here, because we're with people. And when people are together, they hurt each other. Church is the place where if you hurt someone, you say you're sorry. And we practice that simply by getting together with people that we had a fight with last week. Like, that's the miracle of church. That's why this is beautiful. That's why AA meetings are beautiful. Because there's people, real people, reconciling past their hurts together and learning that that is the way to live life. Yeah, when God takes charge, that's the first thing he says. And then finally, the step is to serve. This is steps 11 and 12 in the 12 steps that really boil down to, you know what, you've been having a journey and the journey has helped you and people have helped you along this journey. Go and help others on their journey too. Be a servant, because being a servant puts you in the right headspace, that I'm not better than anybody in this room. It's something I have to remind myself of. I don't like to think about that, but it's very true. It helps me be in touch with reality when I remind myself. Nobody here has to serve me. I'm here to serve them. And that is the right place to be in the universe. It is a good place to be. It makes healthy behavior come out of you. This is something Jesus harped on constantly. That whoever wants to become great among you, if you want to be great, here's what you do. Go be a servant. Be like God in that way. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. That's what being God means. That's what being with God and co-ruling life with God means. It means joining God and serving everyone around you. It's a beautiful way to live. And I know in Dick's journey, he, 40 years sober before he died. He helped so many people just by telling his story, just by saying, I'm Dick, I'm an alcoholic, and I need God and I need you guys just to be sober one more day. And doing that day by day by day by day. And he taught me to live that way too. It took me a little longer to learn it than I would have hoped, but I learned it. And I am grateful for that man. We're having didn't really plan it this way, but these are sign-up Sundays. And I want to share with you a little bit about why I serve. It's not because I enjoy setting up speakers and running sound and all of the electronic-y stuff. I mean, it's kind of fun. I do it because you guys need it. That I know that week by week, Michael's going to come up here, Jackie and Ryan. They come up and they have something to say, and I really want you to hear them. That's why you serve. And you serve to put yourself in the right space in the universe. And what it is right next to God, serving people around you. So I commend you. There's so many ways to serve. They can be pretty small. Dick used to tell me that it was a huge day in his life when he became the guy at AA meetings who made the coffee. It's like, the coffee's always terrible, but that's just part of the experience. Groups never have terribly much money, so they get the cheapest coffee that they can. But when he got to serve these people, it changed him. And it meant a step. And as he went forward in life, he was able to walk both of his sons out of alcoholism. And to my knowledge, they've been sober to this day. I've kind of lost touch with them. And he got to walk so many people away from that cliff that he himself almost fell off of. I don't think I'm capable of knowing how many people that he helped. Service to others. When I come to church and do that, it's not just for fun. I do it because I need it and because it helps me to grow. Now, as we move into the Eucharist time of our worship, I want to invite Aaron back up here. I want you to think back to that offering your body prayer. We do that because God taught us to. That Jesus, with his disciples, said, "Hey, disciples, here's my body. I want you to have it. And here's my blood." Blood is a symbol of, in the Bible, of aliveness. We think of blood as kind of a morbid thing, but it's not in the Bible. It's not. It's a symbol of aliveness and vitality. And to give someone blood is a gift of life. It's like when you donate your blood and it saves someone's life. That's what the blood is a symbol of. All of God's strength, all of God's life, all of his aliveness, can you imagine how much life that is? It is for you. God himself comes to you and says, you know, humans have always been trying to sacrifice things to God. And really it goes the other way. God sacrifices himself for you. That God considers himself a gift to you and wants you to have it. And that's what we come forward for in the bread and in the wine. So when the time comes, I invite you, take the gift that God has for you. It's good. It's not easy, but it's good and it's worth it. Come forward and receive the gift. Take the bread, dip it into the wine, and receive it. It's God's gift to you. His gift has ripped the door off your cage. You are free forever, whether you believe it or not. So go and be free. Take what God gives you and enter into life. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for your gift. We've made a mess of things, trying to run things by ourselves, trying to rule our own lives and captain our own souls. We don't want to be broken anymore. We want you in the pilot seat. We want you to take the wheel. Please come and be in charge of our lives. You are anyway. We're just going to get out of your chair. Bless us, O God, with the life that you made us for. Help us along the journey of making that happen and becoming free. In the name of Jesus Christ, who has set us free indeed, amen. Come to the tables.